If you realize that something you're doing is not work, just pivot. Step back and go, what should I do differently?
Hello, I'm Vivian Kay, and I'm so excited to welcome you to Business Class, Built It Braver, a podcast powered by American Express. If you've heard other episodes, you'll know that this is a series that aims to tackle some of the most common challenges that small business owners face. In each episode, we meet different small business owners, someone trying to do it all, just like you. Then we tap into the experiences of notable Canadian entrepreneurs, people who have built and grown successful businesses. That means they can offer firsthand insights into things like how to manage your cash flow, how to tell your brand story, and of course, the best ways to secure capital in order to grow your business. Sounds good? Alrighty then, let's go. To kick things off today, we're going to have a conversation that encourages the growth of BIPOC businesses in Canada. And we'll talk about some of the particular challenges these businesses face. First up, meet Jordan Subban. You might know him as a Canadian professional ice hockey defenseman. He plays for the Hershey Bears of the American Hockey League. Cool, right? What you may not know is that Jordan also runs a small business, Ujima.com. It's a super stylish online marketplace that features businesses run by women and people of color. It features mostly beauty and lifestyle products, as well as clothing and accessories. Like a lot of us who run our own businesses, Jordan does what he can to stay balanced and focused. We caught up with him during one of his morning meditations.
That's the sound of birds chirping in the morning. I love to just wake up and open the window and listen to the birds. And it helps me just start my day off calm, cool, and relaxed.
And this is how Jordan starts his day, every day. I think it's an awesome way to bring a little calm into a hectic life of an entrepreneur, don't you? Okay, let's get down to business. Jordan's site is called Ujima. It launched in 2020. In the beginning, there were just a few vendors, but now it hosts hundreds. Jordan Subban, welcome to Build It Braver.
Hey, Vivian. Appreciate the kind words. It's great to be on.
What does Ujima mean, and how did you decide on the name?
So Ujima stems from the Swahili word Ujima, which is spelled with one A. I used two because the domain was taken. It is also the third day of Kwanzaa, and it means collective work and responsibility. I thought the name was perfect because it was really fitting with what I envisioned Ujima to be, which is an online marketplace that sets to empower and amplify BIPOC and women-owned businesses, while also helping and doing our best to help to provide opportunity and resources to these businesses as well.
Oh, that's cool. So I know I remember this. So, you know, my very first order, I remember the customer. Do you remember the very first business that signed onto your platform?
I do. That's something I'll never forget. I remember when I was trying to take the next step and figure out how to get businesses, I was like, you know what, I'm going to find businesses. I'm going to email them. And I sat there uncomfortably. And I remember the first one came in. His name is Stace Barton. He's the founder of Any7 Apparel. And, you know, he's like, I love it. I want to come on. And I jumped out of my seat and I was super, super excited.
Oh, well, shout out to Stace. So when you said that you started with a few vendors and then it just quickly quadrupled, how exactly did that happen?
You know, just grinding. I think part of being an entrepreneur is finding a way to make things happen. Everybody's path is different. I was just constantly reaching out to businesses, finding businesses. Now, you know, as we've started to grow a little bit, businesses come on and they sign up by themselves.
Okay, so we'll hear more about Jordan in a minute. But right now, I want to bring in someone who is in the business of empowering BIPOC businesses. Wes Hall is the founder of Kingsdale Advisors, and he's earned himself the title of one of North America's most influential power brokers. He's brokered deals worth billions for corporate Canada. He also happens to be the newest dragon on Dragon's Den. Wes Hall, welcome to Build It Braver.
Well, thank you for having me, Vivian.
Wes, let's talk about the elephant in the room, shall we? Being a BIPOC business in Canada, what's the reality here?
Well, you know, it's very stark and it's very difficult for BIPOC entrepreneurs to get access to capital. If you have a great idea and you just feel that it's the best idea in the world, before sliced bread. Let's say you came up with the recipe for sliced bread and you bring it to an investor or you bring it to a financial institution in this country to support it, they give you a thumbs down.
So why do you think that is?
You know, I think it's difficult sometimes for people in authority making decisions when it comes to who to trust. They look at someone's color and their background and all of a sudden that their trust meter goes off. Because when you think about businesses and getting loans and financing and, or investors for that matter, those people are taking risk. They're taking a risk on you as an entrepreneur. And a certain aspect of the risk is trust. So if for some reason they feel that there's something there that they don't trust, they're not going to take the risk. And as a result of them not taking the risk, they're not going to invest in you. So what are some of those things that they may cause them to doubt you as an entrepreneur? There are certain stereotypes that people have. For example, let's say Black entrepreneurs, where they go, well, they're always late. Well, they're not professional. And the list goes on in terms of what the negative stereotype is that those people may have of that person in that culture. But we know that it's not true, but it's a stereotype that people have. And as a result of that, when you look at a Black entrepreneur, the first thing, instead of looking at their business plan, you look at those negative things.
Right.
Right. And, but you don't look at the fact that, well, who has done this before that were Black, that were wildly successful, that I missed out on.
Right.
Right. Instead of saying that, they just decide that, you know what, I'm just not going to take the risk. And so what we're saying to folks who are in that position is that it is not a risk. One of the things that I know about Black folks is that they're very risk averse, meaning that before they come to you to seek your capital, they did so much soul searching. They just go, I really don't want to be in debt to anyone. I don't want to borrow money. I don't want to do this. I don't want to disappoint anyone. So by the time they come to you, they've gone through that entire process and discussion within themselves. So when they're in front of you, it's almost a guarantee that they're going to do okay. Whereas other cultures, because it's so natural for them to get access to these things, they take it for granted.
Because it's for them, it comes naturally.
Snap your fingers and how much do you want? I remember my own situation. I set up this company, Kingsdale Advisors. It's the number one firm in the country by a country mile. And when I set up the business, I wanted to get capital and I couldn't get capital from anyone. So I ended up mortgaging my house. Fortunately, I had a house. And I had equity built into the house. So I was able to mortgage the house. And I was able to get $100,000 out of doing that to set up this business.
It's a story I know very well. I know to get a loan for my business, I had to get a Black woman to look at my file in order to understand the business that I run, which is textured hair extensions for Black women, because everyone else didn't understand the business and were ready to decline me, but she understood it. So it's, I think sometimes it's really about getting people who understand BIPOC business, who understand our needs, because a lot of us create businesses out of our own needs, to meet our own needs, because the general society isn't doing that.
And it's interesting you mentioned that as well, because the $100,000 I told you about, after all the institutions turned me down, I wanted to borrow against my house and I couldn't even get the money against my house because of the fact that, well, you know, you don't want to have a job anymore. And if the business fails, you won't be able to pay your loan back and blah, 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 right? I went into one of the banks. And I saw a Black man behind a desk. And I went to him with my business plan. And that's how I got my $100,000. And that's how I started this amazingly successful. Think about the investors that lost out.
Sorry for you guys.
Right?
It's interesting to think about how close Wes Hall came to never getting that first $100,000 to start his business. But Wes, being Wes, persevered. And he made it. And now, 20 great years later, Wes has a wealth of information to share with small business owners, people like Jordan Subban, who are just at the start of their journey. Jordan, I don't know about you, but besides having the typical entrepreneur problems, there are problems that are very specific to and being related to being a BIPOC business. Did you have any of those sorts of challenges?
Yeah, I think generally speaking of, you know, some of the trials and tribulations that young or new startups that are BIPOC owned have, you think of things like access to resources and opportunity and capital, you know, mentors and things like that. For me, obviously, one of the things that I had trouble with was capital, raising capital early on.
It's sounds familiar, right? I mean, we just heard Wes Hall describe the exact same problem finding support when he was starting out. Every business is different, though. So I asked Jordan to talk more about the kind of help he needed most as a small business owner.
I would say putting together a team. I have one person that helps me with the marketing. My girlfriend helps me with some of the social media posts, things like that.
Classic. Who hasn't had to lean on a friend or a spouse to help get a business off the ground? But Jordan definitely pays that help forward in terms of how he turns around and helps BIPOC vendors on the Ujima marketplace succeed.
What I also knew when I was starting was that a lot of the trials and tribulations, and I'll give you an example, one would be focus on growth in media. I knew that that was something that I could do just based with my history. So I've helped, you know, some of our vendors get on City TV or news and really cool opportunities. We did a partnership with Adidas, with a couple of our vendors that were involved in that. Definitely.
So do you find that there are parallels between hockey and entrepreneurship?
For me, 100%, at least from my experience. The thing with hockey, when I was playing professional, after my first pro contract, which was a 3-year contract, every year after that, I had 1-year contracts. And for me, what that did was allowed me to become comfortable in the uncomfortable, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. I love how Jordan has turned one of his hockey superpowers, the ability to remain calm under pressure, into a real business advantage.
You know, and that's important because for me now as an entrepreneur, it's just constant being in that uncomfortable. It's consistent. It's every single day. And I feel comfortable, right? And it, again, it goes back to that phrase, you know, just there's going to be ups and downs. Just remember what our goal is and just keep working towards that. Move forward every day.
So Jordan, as a new business owner, what keeps you up at night?
At night, I'd say what keeps me up the most is searching for the answer, finding solutions to problems, issues, whatever you want to call them, that will allow Ujima to grow. I don't think there's any indefinite answer. I think as an entrepreneur, as a startup, you have to just be constantly innovating and finding what's next.
Can you describe one or two sticking points that you're currently having in your business?
Yeah, for sure. I think number one, I would say, especially right now, time management. You know, young business, there's always so much to do. And not having the amount of data that is necessary to properly drive your decisions as a young startup really sometimes leaves me lost as, you know, where I should be spending my time.
Of course, it's not a question of just working harder. Small business owners expect to work our tails off, right? It's a question of knowing what to prioritize, where to put that energy first in order to grow to the next stage. It really sounds like Jordan is having a hard time knowing where to prioritize his time.
My question for you is, with the amount of success you've achieved now and knowing what you know now, how would you spend your first year of entrepreneurship?
Great question, Jordan. I'm not quite sure how much I would have changed because my first year was to educate customers on what I was selling to them. What's my product? What's my value proposition? Why should they hire and engage me? And it was very frustrating, I must say, in the first year because I had to do a lot of educating because the industry that I was in didn't exist the way that was on my business plan. I wanted to change things drastically from what they knew and understood. And it took a lot of educating to do that. But what I decided to do was I was able to engage with the people that corporate Canada had confidence in, investment bankers, lawyers, and accountants. So I was able to sell my concept to those people first, get those people on side, and then I was able to get them to be my advocate.
I'm sure Jordan Subban was taking notes that whole time. But just in case you missed it, Wes is talking about the importance of building your network in the first year, educating people about what your business is really all about. Having those conversations over and over again, it can be excruciating.
When I realized that I was just banging my head against a wall, I start to just step back a little bit and go, okay, how can I get people to understand? Well, you got to get people who they trust to explain it to them. And so sometimes as BIPOC entrepreneurs, we don't have that network. I didn't have that network when I started. I built it. And I was able to get close to people who wanted to hear me out. and I was able to get them on side to help to do my bidding. So I would say do the same thing. The first year, if you realize that something you're doing is not work, just pivot. Step back and go, what should I do differently? And also just ask people who may be in a completely different sector, who've built things from the ground up, and just ask them for their ideas and their thoughts and what you may do differently, and take their advice. Because sometimes we ask people for their advice and we don't take it because we're like, we're going to do our own thing. Ask for the advice, take the advice. But if what you're doing doesn't work, pivot.
Pivot. Word of the year in 2021, of course. But adaptability is always critical in business, no matter the circumstances. And I really like what Wes is saying here about asking people in other sectors for advice. Sometimes you just have to try barking up a different tree if the first one's not listening. And of course, keep asking questions. You're listening to Build It Braver, and we're talking to hockey player and founder of Ajima.com Marketplace, Jordan Subban, along with Wes Hall, founder and executive chairman of Kingsdale Advisors. I'm Vivian Kay, and I'm so happy you're choosing to spend some time with us. If you like what you're hearing, please tell a friend. That's how great things happen. In just a minute, we're going to get back to Jordan and Wes, because you just know Jordan's got more questions. But first, I just want to take a second to let you know all about American Express Business Class. American Express Business Class is an educational resource for today's business leaders. It provides modern education through compelling stories, timely tips, and inspiring insights from business experts, industry leaders, and savvy entrepreneurs. You can learn more at amex.ca/business class.
Imagine you're on the road for a business trip. Now imagine you're on that trip, but this time you've earned 2 times the points on your hotel and car rental. 'Cause I'm free, baby, I'm free, baby, I'm free, baby. Now that's a happy place. Introducing the American Express Aeroplan Business Reserve Card, the card that can help make your happy places even happier. Apply today at amex.ca/aeroplan. On eligible purchases, conditions apply.
Okay, back to Wes Hall of Kingsdale Advisors. Now, here's a man who is a leader in the shareholder advisory services and contested investor situations. He basically orchestrates multi-billion dollar deals for breakfast. But as we heard earlier, it hasn't always been easy. Wes has made a go of a business that, when he started it 20 years ago, was very new and untested. Some might even say niche. It was hard to find allies. Even today, Wes knows what it feels like to walk into a boardroom and see nobody there who looks like him. He wants to change all that. Welcome back, Wes. Most small businesses come up against several challenges, things like cash flow, finding capital, and branding, especially those that are BIPOC businesses. So what sort of extra challenges does being a BIPOC business present? Or is it an advantage, do you think?
You mentioned about being in a niche space. Kingsdale Advisors is in a very niche space. We advise companies on, or activist investors on shareholder activism, meaning that if somebody would like to replace the board of a company in this country, that they would like someone to provide them with advice on how to make that happen. That's what we do. That's very niche. You go to the average person on the street and say, hey, advise companies on shareholder activism and hostile takeovers. And they're like, okay, what is that? Right? my kids would stop explaining what I do to their friends because they just didn't get it. Yeah, he works downtown, right? That's what they say now. He works downtown, right? Because they're like, that's very, very niche, right? Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, it brings its own challenges, right? Because when you're explaining it to potential investors, for example, or potential lenders, they don't get it. They can't see the money rolling in because they just go, I just don't understand it. I don't get it, right? But if you explain it to somebody who is experiencing a board coup, a CEO that somebody says, you need to be replaced because you're not competent enough, and you explain what I do to that person, they're going to get it immediately. And they're going to go, I don't care what you're charging me, I'm going to hire you. Okay? So in those circumstances, people get it. So when I explain what I do to people in Bay Street, they get it. Now they say to me, you know, it's a no-brainer because it's now normal to have a firm like mine working with Corporate Canada, working with activists, investors, and so on. So it's very difficult when you have a great idea and you're in a niche space to kind of explain what you do.
Wes is talking about a common problem faced by a lot of entrepreneurs, no matter their origin story. How to express your idea in the right way and get it in front of the right people.
But what you try to do is to try to go to people who you know they will get it and have those people as allies. And what I did wrong when I started Kingsdale was I just went to the traditional sources, but I didn't go to sources where they would take chances on a new business model, on something that's emerging or potentially could become something special in the future. Now we have a lot of specialized lenders, specialized investors out there that you can now go to and test your business idea to, and they may not get it, but they will understand enough to go, I want to back this just in case it's the next best thing. Because that's what we're seeing in tech. Somebody come up with this great tech idea and it doesn't exist before, and someone go, I'm going to put some money behind you because I bet it's better for me to bet with you than not bet and then lose out.
Wes definitely has some great advice, but he acknowledges that for BIPOC business owners in Canada, finding business allies can be extra challenging. Jordan Subban, for example, the small business owner we met earlier, wants to grow his business, but he's unsure who to turn to for investment support.
Knowing that you started your entrepreneurial journey in finance, I'm starting in tech. Neither are known for being the most diversified industries. What would you say is an important factor that you would maybe tell me to help me navigate and grow my business?
People have stereotype about BIPOC entrepreneurs. Right off the gate, you have to be able to just dispel those stereotypes that they have. You should address them. For example, I mentioned earlier that Black people are always late and that we may not be as professional as we should be. So I took that off the table by always being on time, actually being early in a lot of cases. Because what we do, for example, we have conference calls quite a bit. And we strategize with investment bankers, lawyers, and our clients on dealing with issues. Everybody's on time. I have to be on time. They can't be like, I'm waiting for Wes, because that's going to reinforce the stereotype. So I have to make sure from the get-go that all the negative stereotype that people have of a Black entrepreneur, that I get rid of it off the top. I'm professional. If you sent me an email at 12 o'clock in the morning, if you're a client, at 12:01, you're going to get a response back. And I'm going to always follow up.
As a BIPOC business owner myself, I know this is very real. But also think about it. Wes Hall is number 16 on McLean's Power List, a ranking of 50 influential Canadians. Jordan just asked him what he thinks the most important thing is when navigating and growing a business. And as you heard, Wes prioritizes punctuality. And the reason is he understands firsthand the assumptions that BIPOC entrepreneurs are sometimes fighting against.
So I find for the 20 plus years that I started Kingsdale, and for almost 30 years that I've been on Bay Street, I've always bring this level of professionalism to what I do up until this day. And that's the reason why my firm has been number one ever since. We were 5 years into starting Kingsdale, we became the number one in the country. And we're still the number one in the country almost 20 years later.
Now, Wes, are there ways to leverage available resources to increase visibility amongst the BIPOC businesses?
I think one of the things that you find is that BIPOC businesses tend to compete among each other a little bit too much. You know, if we pool our resources and we go, you know what, I've learned a few things starting from the ground up, and I'm going to bring that knowledge to other Black businesses or BIPOC businesses, we're going to be so much further ahead. So one of the things that we're doing through the Black North Initiative, for example, we're creating a hub, entrepreneurial hub, whereby Black businesses and BIPOC businesses can actually go there and they start to get the resources. They start to get help, access to capital, you know, how to incorporate a company, connect them with proper lawyers, proper accountants, you know, places where they need help to be able to say, no, no, we can guide you through these different areas so that they're not in the dark alone.
Incidentally, the Black North Initiative pledge is worth checking out. It's where companies like American Express Canada have made public commitments to address and alleviate racism and increase equity for all racialized and underrepresented Canadian communities in the workplace.
When you set up a business, especially when you're BIPOC, you just feel that you're just so lonely because there's nobody else there like you. You're hitting your head against the wall all the time. But if you have a place that's built to help you, it makes the journey so much easier. And that's what we're trying to do to encourage the next generation of BIPOC entrepreneurs.
I think that's a great note to end on. Wes Hall, I want to thank you so much for your candor in talking about diversity and inclusion in business with me today, and for your thoughtful words that you had for Jordan.
Vivian, thank you. It's great chatting with you, and I hope I get the privilege to do that again.
And Jordan Subban, I want to thank you for raising some great questions that a lot of us are trying to deal with while growing a business, especially in the BIPOC space.
Vivian, thanks so much for having me. Gained some valuable insight here and just grateful to be on.
And thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, don't forget to subscribe. And hey, while you're at it, leave us a review and tell your friends about us. We business owners need to stick together. We've got some incredible business mentors coming your way, so keep checking out the show. I'm Vivian Kay. Thanks again for listening to Business Class, Build It Braver, and may you continue to prosper.